Okay. Thanks everyone for coming out for AI and Halacha. I'll start with one methodological point, right? I think I mentioned this also when we did lab-grown meats, which is that it's hard to study, you know, how Halacha has responded to a topic when it's still responding to that topic. So lab-grown meat, it's a live discussion, and things were being published as I was preparing. So it's very hard to do that, and all the more so when the topic is really as new as artificial intelligence is, right? Like, this sort of came onto the public consciousness, what, early 2023? I have not seen anything that represents, like, a...
It's been around for a while.
It's been around for a while, but in the public consciousness. Yeah, that's when everyone started paying attention to this, and all the rabbis started writing their drushes from it, and all of this stuff started happening, in the past several months. I wasn't able to find any, like, systematic, you know, essays or, you know, written halachic presentations. Like, it's all very general. And so a lot of the conclusions that we're going to come to may hold up, may not, and maybe the new discussion develops as we go, which also means that the discussion here is going to be a little bit more speculative than usual, where we're not going to be landing any, like, firm conclusions. Okay, should we trust Psak Halacha to artificial intelligence? Since there's no obvious halachic answer, like, what do you guys think? We already had one way, one voice. I'm seeing some no's. Are those confident no's, or are those like, I don't really know what to say about this, but...
I think there's potential for it to be used as a research tool, but not to make any finalized things.
Okay. Anyone, like, firmly supportive?
Get rid of their age-old rabbi.
Yes, the rabbi. Famously the most popular of public figures. You know, I think people will do their best to navigate this sensitively, but also it's much easier to ask computer questions.
But your first thing is answered before.
Okay, fine. So you already peeked ahead, which was cheating. Obviously, you have to ask the AI if it could be a posing for you. If it doesn't want to, then no one's going to be supportive.
So ask your L-O-R-A-I.
Right, you're both Orthodox artificial intelligence. And lo, when you ask ChatGPT, it says...
Wait, what is that? Is that what an answer you got when you asked?
I asked ChatGPT.
Programming.
I asked ChatGPT, are you able to issue halakhic rulings? And it said no. And so, if it knows that it can't do it, then we all know that it can't do it, and let's get out of here.
It also lies.
Okay, so... Okay, so could be that this AI is either... not smart enough to know that it can answer halakhic questions, or smart enough to know that it can't, but maybe that other AIs could. Right? There are different possibilities here.
Or that it just doesn't want to.
So is this...
Or it just doesn't want to, right? Maybe it's... Honestly, some of the language here sounds a little bit like it knows not to start issuing halakhic rulings.
So this whole thing exactly...
This first paragraph is exactly what the computer told me.
There's two paragraphs. Both of them
came straight from the computer. It's wild. Right? You definitely can't go to the Quran, that's for sure.
No.
I'm that's even worse than AI.
They probably said that, no, they can't do it for any religion.
You know, I did not check whether it could paskin Sharia law. Anyone who wants to check that, I encourage you afterwards. I'm very curious.
For this.
So you might... Okay, so...
Yeah, I can.
It says the same thing? Or it says yes? No, but agree. Okay, good. I would like to think it's consistent across iterations.
It's not.
I have an issue.
It's not.
Right, so then... That raises one of the problems, but we'll push that to the side in a moment. So let's just refocus here on the core question. Right, so the AI thinks it can't. Which itself, the reasons it gives is interesting, and we could tease out whether these reasons themselves are going to hold up. So... the first reason it gives is, on the first paragraph, I don't have the authority or expertise to make decisions in matters of Jewish law, meaning I don't know enough. That's one factor that we're going to have to consider. Does the computer know enough to actually be able to answer the question? It says no. Okay. And I think that is actually quite accurate, and if anyone tests, you know, the chatbots with halakhic questions, you'll find that sometimes they're on the money, and sometimes they're very strange, and they sometimes give answers that are contradictory. I think that is certainly the case. Just one second. And number two, halakhic rulings require extensive knowledge of Jewish legal traditions, texts, and often involve consultation with qualified experts and authorities, which may be a second element, whether there's a role for experts or authorities to play in this conversation. But those are what ChatGPT thinks are the relevant factors, which probably means it read a bunch of stuff online about how AI shouldn't be answering halakhic questions, and then told us this. So the English-speaking internet seems broadly to think this, which is what ChatGPT is kind of building itself off of. Okay, but that's what it thinks, but we might be smarter than it at this point. So what do we think? We saw a bunch of no's, but I deliberately did not try to probe what the objections are. Why should the answer be no? And I'm being deliberate here because, again, there's not as much that's authoritative about this question. So our own intuitions here, I think, have more weights than they would for other kinds of halakhic questions. So why not? What are the objections?
It's high probability of it being wrong.
Right. So long as it's going to get strange answers to questions or wrong answers to questions or make up answers to questions, we don't want to trust it. That, I think one could argue, is just a matter of time, right? This is like the popular wisdom is that right now we have no idea how high an artificial intelligence could go, and it could reach the point where it really is able to answer questions much more authoritatively. And it's just a matter of training it with the right database and training it with enough sample questions so it knows how to get right answers. And eventually, you can imagine training it to a point where it would get the right answer. So for the rest of the learning tonight, we're going to assume an AI that has been trained well enough to be able to pretty consistently give normal, conventional halakhic answers to questions. That's going to be our first premise. Because you're right, knowing that it's going to get things wrong is obviously, of course you're not going to rely on it, but it might be that in 10 or 15 years we're dealing with a different situation.
It can't get smicha.
It can't get smicha. That's interesting. Right, so if I'm understanding you right, you're saying in order to issue halakhic rulings, you need to have this thing called smicha.
Smicha, and then there's whatever the other word is, the.
So there are different levels in psak. This is a good background thing to know in general. So your average rabbi has what we call yore yore smicha. That literally means it's the same word repeated. It means you shall rule, you shall rule. You should be able to issue halakhic rulings. One level above that, when you talk about a beit din, a CRC, the dayanim there, they have yadin yadin, which means they have the authority to rule on, you know, monetary cases in Beit Din, which is a higher level of smicha, requires more study. There's a third level that has to do with being able to assess whether animals have blemishes that make them valid or invalid for korbanot. That's a very specialized kind of thing that we don't care so much about in practical circumstances these days. But you're right. So if being able to issue a ruling means being authorized to do so, then ChatGPT has not been authorized to do so. Can it be authorized to do so?
Not really.
Okay, you say no, but why not?
It's not a physical person.
It's not a person. Okay, so you're stipulating that there's this thing that you require a person to be able to make a psak. You can't have, you know, anything that's inanimate or anything that's not, you know, endowed with the soul.
Just because they know the answer doesn't mean they can't do anything.
Okay, so we have to sort of tease out, and there is some basis for this, we'll see shortly, that there might be some human or, you know, person-based element of psak that a computer couldn't do. By the same token, well, we'll save that for a little bit later, actually. Yeah.
I'd make the distinction between, like, basically an AI that's acting as an interpreter for basically a search engine, where it's, all right, is this kosher? And then it looks up what that thing is and compares with kosher.
Like databases, yeah.
And databases and spends out an answer. I think that would be fine. But then going beyond to sort of new unanswered questions would be where the.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
We can make this very meta and like ask ChatGPT whether lab-grown meat is kosher, and then ask a lab-grown if you make lab-grown dinosaur. Like, we can just like layer all these things on top of each other, but we won't do that tonight. But you're raising an important point, which is going to be the first, I think, question that we need to try to unpack is, what do we mean by halakhic rulings? And are there different kinds of halakhic rulings? And we can see there's actually, I've identified, I think, at least 5 different categories of rulings that we can try to tease out, and there may be more. So maybe we'll say it's okay for some and not for others. And we'll have to figure that out. But first...
So I just want to go back to one thing that's there. Did you ask a second question for the second paragraph, or did it just come out with that?
It came out with the whole thing, yeah. It reads a little bit, I'll tell you the truth, when you read the answer, it reads a little bit like it was pre-programmed to give you that answer.
Yeah.
Like, it's know that it's not supposed to do... to give you halakhic ruling. The same way it knows it's not supposed to give you hate speech, or it knows it's not supposed to give you, you know, like political opinions or whatever it is. Like, it's meant to be a bit neutral and it's programmed to be neutral, so it might not be able to give you the answers you want. But remember, we're stipulating here an AI that you fed every safer that's ever been printed into, and then you trained it on 100,000 halakhic questions that the answers are vetted by Postgame, and they all, you know, it starts getting them right, and eventually when it starts getting a bunch of questions right, then the question is, would we rely on it? We're assuming that it's at that level and has the freedom to be able to pass again, unlike this.
Like, if it's like what Ari said, like, it would have to say the answers from, and say which rabbi it's from. So like, say a bunch of different answers, because everyone holds, a lot of people hold different.
Okay, so I think you're pointing to what we could call, like, the first kind of psak, which is collecting the facts, right? If you, you mentioned one example of, like, just identifying, is this a kosher symbol? And if so, what organization is it from? Or is this on a kosher list from some country? Right, in Europe, oftentimes they don't have kosher symbols, they have kosher lists of products that are approved. Or just collecting all the opinions that are out there. So I know that Moshe Feinstein says this, and I know that the Sisley Ezer says that, and I'm just going to tell you all of that. The same way I could Google that information, or I could go into any summary website or read any anthology and find that information, so the computer could get it for me as well. I think a similar example of a kind of like information gathering question are those questions that are so unambiguous and uncomplicated that you would feel totally comfortable Googling them also. So, like, what is the bracha on an apple? You don't need to, like, ask your posek to think about the question, what is the bracha on an apple? You just know. Or you don't know, and you Google it. But it's not something that requires, like, the beginning of thought. And so that might be the area where we'd be most comfortable saying, oh, the computer can do that. It's just gathering the facts. But it's not thinking or making decisions. It's just an anthology. But we can distinguish that from cases where it actually does have to do some thinking. So let's take a look at source number two, I'm sorry, which is a great, this whole section of Shulchan Aruch is fantastic for getting a better sense of what halakhic ruling is, but I've just excerpted certain pieces. So it's in the context of the mitzvah, this is Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya Reish Mem Bet, in the context of a mitzvah to honor one's teacher, and part of honoring one's teacher, according to the Shulchan Aruch, is Asur la'adam lahorot lifnei rabo la'olam v'chol amora lefanav chayv mita. If I'm standing next to my primary halakhic teachers, I can't issue a ruling while they're there. It's disrespectful to them that I'm going to trust my own authority and my own opinion over there. So if they're here, I'm going to defer to them, and I'm not going to make a ruling myself. But what is a ruling? So there are a couple of criteria here. Number one, lo mikri hora'a ala kishamora al ma'asa shabalafanav, aval im sha'alula talmid halakha kidivri mi, yachol lomar mashi bedato. One thing that makes a hora'ah, a ruling, different than just education, is that a ruling applies to a real-life case. You come to me and you say, my spoon fell into my cholent pots, and is the spoon sleishiks or not? But if you just ask in general, if one's spoon were to fall into one's cholent pot, what would be the halacha? That's not the same kind of ruling. That doesn't have the same weight or significance. You have to figure out why. Right? If it's just about gathering data, it seems like that shouldn't matter, but it seems like there might be something else going on in what makes a ruling. That's not just about presenting facts. And similarly, and you could make this a third category if we like, lo mikri hora ela bedavar sheyish bo chidush lashora. A hora is only something where you're giving new information, but not a fact that everyone knows and it's just about communicating it to you. Any well-known halacha that is obvious to everyone, kigon notin tam lefgam, which is not the best example of a halacha that's totally yedua to everyone, but it's not so obscure. It's when, when we talk about like milchik's kalim and fleishik's kalim, we're concerned about transferring taste, but sometimes that taste could be, you know, lefgam, could be some kind of negative bad flavor, and we're not as concerned about it halachically, that it should transfer from one kli to another. Or levatel iser b'shishim, is it bitel b'shishim if I put this small amount of milk into my cholent? So that's also a permitted kind of hora. It's not a big deal, because those are both obvious. So the Shulchan Aruch is giving you the sense that when there are well-established halachic facts, that's not a ruling. And it's the same as using Rabbi Google, it's the same as using any reference book. You don't have to ask a shayla, on the one hand, versus a case where it has to evaluate and think and make a new determination, that's a chiddush, or apply information to a new case. You know, the case that came in front of me as opposed to the information in the abstract. Not all cases are reflected in the Shulchan Aruch. I'll put out a different one. What would you say about an AI that you send a picture of your sukkah to and it tells you whether your sukkah is kosher?
Provided it's fully right.
Assume for the moment it's going to get the question right because we've trained it. Meaning, assume for the moment we've trained it on enough examples that we should feel pretty confident that it's going to get it right. So it has to make some evaluation of the facts. It has to understand what it's looking at and figure out where there are walls and where there's a roof and how thick the schach is, etc. It has to evaluate all of those things. But at the end of the day, it might be giving you information that you already know. So do we say that it's considered a halakhic ruling because it has to evaluate the facts based on the image that it's looking at? Or no, it's just giving you basic information. And then its ability to evaluate facts, that's not a halakhic determination, that's just... You know, anyone who looks at reality can determine the facts for you.
It's getting the halachic information and comparing that to the...
To the Platonic halachic information.
Getting the dimensions of the sukkah and comparing that to the halachic information.
Right. So that's already an evaluation, I have to say. Is this case comparable to that halachic case?
I think it would depend on whether it's a simple thing or something more complicated.
So you want to go back to the question of chiddush or not. If it's making some kind of new judgment or using really making a judgment call as opposed to something that is so obvious that everyone's going to get the right answer.
That it's... Or a pre-made judgment call of whatever a tefach is this amount and therefore...
Right. We program the computer that a tefach is 4 inches and
whether
that's
that
what we go.
Whether programming is directly or through other things and
right.
That it measures that and compares. That's, I wouldn't call that a halachic ruling.
You don't call that a halachic ruling. Okay. Everyone confident with that? Taking a picture of a sukkah and evaluating it's not a halachic ruling? I don't know, when you build a sukkah and you call me over to come look at it and see if it's kosher, so I'm also not making a halachic ruling, according to that. I'm just looking at a sukkah and then telling you, well, the rule is that you need this number of walls and this much schach. And that's like a basic fact also.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. The Shulchan Aruch, I'm not sure, is so confident, because the Shulchan Aruch thinks that when you deal with a real case... That already gives it the authority of a ruling, more so than dealing with like abstract laws. So anytime you have to apply a law, it sounds like you're getting a little bit of extra significance, which maybe suggests that an AI could be a research tool, but not a halachic tool. It can help me learn a sugya, but then I have to be the one who makes the decision about it at the end of the day. You might get that sense. One more factor to just put out on the table here is from a different section of Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat, which is in the section on monetary laws. As we mentioned, that there's a second level of smicha, yadin yadin, that you're dealing with a higher level of authority here, and indeed, we find that in halacha as well. Because the criteria for being a dayan, it seems, are more strict than the criteria for being able to issue a halachic ruling. The Shulchan Aruch says here, if, for example, you have a convert on your beitin, the beitin is pasul. You cannot have a convert serve on your courts, unless either his mother or his father was Jewish. If his mother was Jewish, obviously he wouldn't even be a convert. But if his father was Jewish, then he would still be a convert, but nonetheless he'd be valid. Right? I don't think there's any rule out there that says that a ger can't be a Talmud Chacham who you ask questions to. And some of the, you know, Tanaim and pre-Tanaim were converts, but they couldn't have necessarily been on a Beit Din because there's a restriction from a ger. Or the next halacha, a katan. So there's a discussion about a katan. If you're under 13, it seems like you can't be a dayan. And there's even a debate. Does a 13-year-old count as a dayan, or do you have to be 18 years old? Right? If you're 15 years old, you're halakhically an adult for every other matter. But for being a dayan, the standards are higher. So there's a sense in which being a dayan specifically requires a certain status in the community. You were alluding to this idea of being, you know, a person with smicha. And it seems like that would certainly be restricted, because you really need the standing of a, you know, halachic, Jewish adult male who is in a conflict. And that's not true by issuing regular halachic rulings. The Pitchei Tshuva in source number 4 makes the comment that women are invalid to serve as dayanotes on Bate Din. The parameters of that is a discussion for another time, but the background assumption is that women are psulot, but they could be poskot. A woman could learn in kol for 40 years and become a poseket, and she would learn all of halacha, and she'll be able to issue halachic rulings. It seems unambiguous. I don't think anyone's on the record saying that can't be the case. Someone could paskin halacha if she knows the information. But in terms of that, you know, halachic standing that you need for certain kinds of different functions, so that's not going to be as broad as the entire Jewish people or the entire educated Jewish people who could be poskim. And so you get a sense already just from these couple of sources that we might want to distinguish between kinds of psak that require personal status that would be excluded from non-people, kinds of psak that are obvious that you're basically just Googling it, and when I trust Google to give me a helpful search result, I can trust an AI to give me a helpful search result as well, and both of those are equally fine. And then this gray area in the middle, which seems to be the area of making evaluative decisions, maybe subjective decisions, where a little bit of your own intelligence is going to be relevant. Okay, before we go further, any other questions, observations, factors to add into this picture before we start seeing what I think could be an approach from traditional sources?
So would the AI need to be bar mitzvah?
Right, but also bar mitzvah by like human time or bar mitzvah by computer time? You know, let it run for, you know, parallel processing so we can get it all done much faster. I don't know. Seems like math, right? You could ask the question, right? Is there any source out there that says a katan can paskin halacha for you? Right? There's a 10-year-old who's just a genius. And he went to yeshiva, and he listened to all the best shiurim, and he learned everything, and he's a gaon. And he's 11 years old. Can he paskin for you? Right now, we don't know of a reason why not. At least as of now, it seems like the answer could be yes. Right? As long as you know the information, and you have the qualification, and you have smicha, so you're going to be valid. A katan, it seems like, can't be a dayan, but even there are opinions that say that it's only midorabanan, and midoraita, they can be a dayan. Which means midoraita, you could go to court, and there would be 3 7-year-olds sitting in judgment on your case, but they all have extensive smicha and knowledge, and you trust them to get things right. Okay. Okay, so what I want to do for the rest of our time is look at a little bit of precedent. I mean, there's not a ton of precedent for this, obviously. This is a very recent case. But there's a little bit of precedent that we could point to that might outline some factors, some criteria to be aware of. And then try to not make the case for using AI, which I think would be an obvious case. The obvious case would basically be, if it knows it's going to get the right answer, you'd want to trust it and use it to get the right answer. But try to articulate some reasons why we might hesitate. Now, these aren't halachic. Some of these reasons aren't halachic at all, and some of them might not be the strongest halachic arguments. And again, that's because we're still trying to work our way through understanding this factor, this phenomenon, rather. Okay, so first for precedent. I was able to tease out what I thought were two different arguments for two different sources of possible precedent, and I'll point out why I think they're both not very good precedents. The first precedent is books. Right. So, do we have any halacha books on this shelf? We have some Gemaras. There's no Mishnah Brura here. Okay. So, I'm holding a sitter, and in the back of the sitter there's a halacha section where it tells you, you know, what parts of Shemoneh Esrei you stand up for, and where you bow and where you don't bow. This book isn't a person, but I'm going to read it and I'm going to follow the rulings. So, how does that work?
The rulings were made by a person.
Okay.
And then put into the book.
They're made by a person, put into a book, and it's really just, I'm not poskening by the book, I'm poskening by Rabbi Basil Herring, Rabbi Leonard Batenki, and Rabbi Heshi Billitz, who were the ones who put together this book. And Rav Schechter, who did a lot of the halachic essays in the back. But I'm really just following them, and it's just a roundabout way of communicating directly with them. You could say that. And that might be the basis for some of these ideas. So the Pidchei Tshuva back in Yom Hadea, so it says you can't issue a halachic ruling in front of your teachers. He quotes a Tshuva from the Shvut Yaakov, who says, Dilachein, 6-7 words in on the first line. Ra'ui l'chol mi shehigia lehora, anyone who is authorized to issue a halachic ruling, shelo yoresh shum hora, should still not issue a ruling, bilti iyun tchila b'sefer, before looking in a book, because of this halacha that you shouldn't issue a ruling in the presence of your rebbe. Why? Ki rabotenu hein hein hasfarim, asher nitpashtu b'karev Yisrael. Most of the learning I've ever done in my life, by just by quantity, forget anything else, was from books. You learn a Gemara, you learn a halacha, you'll spend 3-4 hours sitting in Seder, you know, reading sources, and then 1 hour, an hour and a half in a shiur. Just by quantity, you're spending more time with books. So my primary teachers aren't really teachers at all. They're really just the books. And so if I'm able to learn from a book, I should be able to learn from a computer when it gives me the answer. Except, as we mentioned, this was written by a person. And the chiddush of AI is that it's not being written by a person. It's generating new text, new information. Ones that might look a lot like the texts that were written by people, but was actually written by no people. And so it could be that, okay, I could trust books, I could rely on books and poskim from books because those were written by people and I'm communicating with those authorities, but here there's no authority backing up the system. Right? Can you push back on that?
No, so then there'd be a distinction with then an AI taking your question, interpreting it, and then saying, this is a paragraph written by a rabbi that applies and answers your question.
Ah, so it could be that a very valuable function would be, I write my question, and it's able to find all of the, you know, tshuvot and all of the essays that relate to this question directly or indirectly. And then I'm still the one who's actually reading it and trying to apply it as the reader, as the person asking the question, but it's providing a very valuable function in data collection, right? Gathering all the material together, but every word was written by someone who has the authority to write that word and communicate that. I think you could definitely make that argument. And I think it's very persuasive, and that's one step above Google, where Google can't really, you know, tease out exactly what your question means and find all the relevant Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbachs that deal with it. You could push back, I think, on this distinction between books and AI and say, well, the AI was also trained by people. It doesn't just train itself, so I'm the one who trained it to get a bunch of questions right. Right? Would it be a problem if I wrote a code that it asks me a question and it goes through a list of, you know, 1,000 relevant answers and there's just a very complicated flowchart telling you what answer to spit out? I don't think so. So if that's not going to be a problem, why is this a problem? I just trained it to come to those answers, you know, faster than I would have been able to plug in all the answers manually. But I'm the one who decided what was the right answer and what was the wrong answer when I was training it. So maybe that suggests they really could be our teachers, just like a book is our teacher, an AI could be our teacher also.
But could an argument against that be that books are like a fixed thing, it exists as it is when someone wrote it, but when you train an AI, you're training it to look at all of the internet, and the internet is always mm-hmm. changing, and anyone could put anything on there, so it's not getting the information from a fixed source.
Okay, but you could, right? I could just feed in every safer. There's a great database called Otsar HaChachma.
Right.
It has, I don't know, 120-something thousand svarim on it. I could just give it every safer and then not expose it to any more information. And then it will be a little bit limited in that it will have a hard time dealing with new questions that come up. And it might not have the greatest idea of what is the common practice in the community as it is, because it can't assess what's happening in the community. But for lots of questions, that would still be very useful, I would think. I think the more, you know, powerful question is, when it generates new text, does that count as its own creative work, or is that just a product of my creative work? But I think is one of the questions that you know, is the essential question we're really trying to answer. That's one piece of precedent. A more direct piece of precedent comes from this tshuva of the Mishnah Halacha, which we will not read all of. I gave you, you know, a bunch of excerpts, and they're really valuable. The Mishnah Halacha has about 6 tshuvot here, all about how terrible it is that people are using computers for halachic functions. he's not talking about AI. This was published, I cut out the publication date, but I want to say about 25, 30 years ago. And he has some of them about computers that you could use to check a mezuzah or a Sefer Torah to see if it was written correctly. So can you use a computer to scan, you know, just the entire parchment of a Sefer Torah to see if there are any mistakes? Mishnah Halacha does not like that. He thinks it's a bad idea. Can you use it to calculate various kinds of calculations that you need for things like Hilchot Nida? Without getting into the details of all of those calculations, which are much more complicated than we have time for. He also says, no, you can't rely on it. And the basic arguments he makes is that, well, he outlines five arguments. Some of them really collapse into one another. One is that these computers have never served under Talmidei Chachamim. They're basically just, you know, he uses the word a kishofar u'mashpech. It's just like a funnel. Like, people put information in and it spits information out.
A horn, it said.
Right, so a shofar and a mashpech. A shofar is a horn and a mashpech is a funnel, I believe. And so whatever halacha would come in are going to come out, and we have no idea what halacha are going into these computers. How do we know how we're programming this machine to be able to calculate the different Hilchot Nida issues or to calculate all sorts of things that need to be calculated? It might be programmed with a bunch of mistakes, and so the answers it's going to give you are bad as well. Now, that's number one. You could solve that problem, I think, by programming it well, right? Just have a trusted group of advisors who all program the AI to do good work. But that's one of his concerns. Number two is that the people involved are, you know, at that time, there were probably fewer, you know, frum Jews in high tech. So these were a bunch of heretics and apikorsim, and you can't really trust them to issue halachic rulings, even if they were going to get them right. It's still not valid to use their material. Okay, but again, we could solve that problem by having the right people plan it. Number three is a technical problem. A lot of these questions require a lot of precision. If you're not very precise in your programming, you're going to, very small details can make big mistakes. You know, when I ask you what temperature was the cholent, if you're off by a degree or two, that's going to have a big difference for whether your whole kitchen is treif or not. But, okay, again, that's just a matter of programming it well enough. And this fourth one is the one that's most profound, because this fourth one, and I'm summarizing here outside, is that in order to be a posek, you need to serve under Talmidei Chachamim. You need Mishamish Talmidei Chachamim and get Shimush and get practical experience. And until you do so, you're not valid as a posek. You know, you could, he draws an analogy to medical school. In medical school, you learn for, he says, 6 years. That must have been the norm for medical schools at his time or his place. And then afterwards, you have 3 years of residency, and then you're a doctor. So you could be the greatest expert in the world, but if you're not getting the practical experience, you don't get to serve, which it's going to be difficult, you know, the first couple hundred shilas that the AI answers where it doesn't have any experience. But if it keeps answering shilas under the supervision of a posek, who keeps correcting them when there are any mistakes, so then it seems like it would be a valid tool once you train it, once it does have that shimush. Unless what he means by shimush is some kind of emotional connection, which is a bolder claim that you need to have a relationship with the teacher. And it's hard to imagine a computer having a relationship with the teacher. So the Mishnah Halacha does deal with our question probably in as close to a direct way as possible with our traditional sources from before like 2021, let's say. And he's very opposed to it. But a lot of the concerns he has aren't really applicable to the situation we're dealing with. They're about fixed computers that are not being programmed particularly well, that are not necessarily so reliable, that don't necessarily have the right experience. But it seems, conceivably, if you could program a computer that you knew was going to be good enough, that there'd be no essential problem with this. He doesn't say that. He's very opposed consistently throughout. But each of his objections, it seems like you could solve by having the right team putting it together and giving it the right experience. His last argument is that if you don't struggle in learning and you don't really suffer as you, you know, build up your knowledge base, you're not going to be as good an authority. But who says that applies to computers? Maybe that only applies to people. But computers don't need to suffer in order to learn well. I think you can make that argument very cleanly. And so from precedent, we don't have such great definitive evidence one way or the other. We have this sense that on the one hand, texts can be reliable, but it might be that only texts based on people are going to be reliable and the new generation of texts is going to be a potential problem. And the machines also, we have to be at least suspect of their reliability, assuming they're not going to get the answer right all the time. But if at some point you were able to train a computer to never make a mistake and always give respectable logic answers, seems like you might have what to rely on. which is where the bases for opposition come in. We already mentioned a few of them, and given the time we have, we have time to flesh them out in some detail at least. Right, some reasons to be suspect of using computer posting. So, of course, you have to ask the GPT as well, is it possible for AI chatbot to be a poseek? And it says no. And it introduces our first reason for saying no. A word of background. We have been treating halakha up until this point, in this, this year, in this learning, as though there is some right answer out there. And the question is just how we could get the computer to the point where it's able to get the right answer, and whether we can trust that it has done so. Right? But halakha is one fixed thing. Otherwise, it's very hard to imagine what it means to say that the computer got the right answer when there's a machloket between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Avadi Yosef about whether something is mutter or usser on Shabbos, and the computer tells you, like Rav Avadia. Is that a wrong psak? Hard to know what that means. It seems like you have multiple options. And so it could be that the fact that there are multiple halakhic options itself maybe is better for computers, maybe is worse. But we have to see how that has an impact.
It doesn't outright say no, though.
This ChatGPT reply in source number 7.
Right. It doesn't say no. It just says that it doesn't actually say no. It says we have AI technology has advanced significantly. And also that is determining religious rulings, especially in complex matters like halakha, involves more than just information retrieval. It doesn't say no. Like, I could say, I have advanced my Torah learning.
I right now don't have the capability,
but later on I could have the capability.
Yeah, in this paragraph, it did not categorically deny that an AI could ever be an authority. It just denied that it itself currently could. So correct. In this paragraph, it doesn't say so. I imagine if ChatGPT has a personality and beliefs, it probably believes that AI is going to get better over time. I hope so. I mean, I think we believe that about ourselves. I hope that ChatGPT believes that about itself also. Very optimistic. It really has hope for itself. And so if AI is going to get better and better over time, so it might say, it's true that you can't retrieve information. Again, just retrieve information. You need deep understanding of religious texts, traditions, and the ability to apply legal principles and cultural context, community practices, and individual circumstances. But it's not entirely clear that you couldn't train a computer to know those things. Right? Again, it's just about getting enough data to be able to make respectable decisions. The one thing I want to flag from this reply, which I think I could have found, other stories to develop this point, but I found it here, and I'm happy to be someich on this. Additionally, that last sentence, cultural context, community practices, and individual circumstances, want to underline that word, are crucial considerations in making halakhic rulings. So our first way out, right, if you want to say that an AI can't be a poseik, so one way out is to say an AI thinks in a way that is not conducive to psak. An AI thinks, okay, we'll put thinks in quotation marks, so it's not clear what thinking means in this context, but it certainly looks like it's thinking. I only know that you're thinking because you look like you're thinking, so I could be just as charitable to the computer if I'd like. And I could say that it thinks in a way that's maybe too mathematical and too rigid and too theoretical, in a way that isn't sufficiently sensitive to the nuances of the person who's asking you the question, and the nuances that lie behind the question, and the extenuating circumstances involved in the question, to be able to actually practically answer questions for you. So the computer could tell you that this is usher, but only a poseik could tell you, but there are lenient opinions to rely on, and I know that this is going to be a challenge for your shalom bias, and I know that your parents have a preference that you do one thing or the other, and I could balance lenient opinions and give you a bigger leniency than a computer might want to give you. Because halakhic ruling is actually more subjective and individualistic than it might seem. So the computer's always going to think there's one right answer to a question, and it's up to us to have enough background and breadth to be able to assess whether that right answer is right for the circumstance, or maybe we need to be more machmir, given the challenges we're facing, or more makil, or other challenges. And a computer can't do that. That is the first approach that you could take. That you can't be sufficiently individualistic or emotionally sensitive or whatever to be able to get you the right answers.
That's not completely true, though, because I, from experience, my dad went on ChatGPT and had a complete argument with it about global warming. And they were back and forthing. So the AI ChatGPT was hearing every point he had and coming up with a new answer to combat him. Now, it's not perfect yet. It was coming up sometimes with repeat answers, but it still can learn. If you're, like, a rabbi can't, like, just look at you and say, you...
I know you have marital problems.
Right.
Like, that's not... I don't have that magic power.
You tell the rabbi that you're having marital problems. You tell the ChatGPT that you're having marital problems. Now it takes that into consideration when giving you an answer.
Okay, so the pushback, which is appropriate pushback, is, again, maybe this is all a question of degree, but you hook up your computer to a webcam so it can see your face, and you give it your whole biographical history because it should know all the background, and if the answer seems too machna or too makil, you push back, and then it assesses, again, based on the new information, and it, you give it, you know, access to your bank account so it knows how much money you have and whether this is going to be too machna or not for you, or you just tell it whether it's too expensive or not. And for each of these details, it's conceivable that it could get there. It might not be able to. I don't think we know the limits right now. But it's at least imaginable that if you hook it up to a computer and you hook it up to a webcam and it's able to hear the tone of your voice and it remembers every question you've ever asked it, it could recognize your circumstances. And then on the flip side, it could be trained how to respond when this is a financial burden and how to respond when there's counter pressure in the community and how to respond when there's a Shalom bias issue or a Kibbutz Avaim issue or any other kind of mitigating factor. Those are all conceivable for a computer to be able to do. So I think from that perspective, it's not a definitive, you know, rejection. I think when I see and hear people writing about this, this is one of the common things they'll say. They'll say, the computer can never get sufficiently sensitive. It's not obvious to me. Maybe it could get sufficiently sensitive. You train it well enough, it'll get sensitive. You know, you have these, the chatbots that are hooked up to, you know, robotic people. And, you know, it seems like they're able to hold conversations and have something of a, you know, something that looks like a relationship. So it could be that it's able to learn these things over time with enough practice and enough data. That's possible objection number one. It's a popular objection. I'm not sure it's going to totally hold up. There's possible objection number two. This is a mystical claim, or a metaphysical claim, which is very hard to substantiate, but is definitely attested to in halacha, which is that there's a behind the rational calculations that are going on in the posuk's head, there's an element of siyata dishmaya, that Hashem gets involved and ensures that your psak is good and, you know, supports what you're doing as a posuk. And you have a few examples of this. I'll quote one of the more authoritative early ones, but Ramban develops the idea as well. So the Gemara in Sota, in the context of knowing... do we have time to do a background on Sota? We don't. Okay, so there's a discussion that for some halakhic purpose in the context of Sota, it's important to know how long marital relations take. And different Amoraim have different opinions about exactly how long they take. And one of those opinions is from Ben Azai. Now, the Gemara basically asks a question, says, hold on a second, Ben Azai never got married. So how did he know how long relations took? So the Gemara gives two answers. The first answer is he had a mesorah, meaning someone else communicated to him, just told him, you should know it takes, you know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever number of minutes it takes. The other answer, according to the Gemara, in just the last three words, Sod Hashem li Re'ev, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. The secret of Hashem is to those who fear him. Meaning, Hashem is able to communicate secret, hidden knowledge to halakhic authorities, you know, people of the sufficient stature to be worthy of the title, and they're able to paskin based on that. They have an awareness and insight into Torah that isn't rationally explainable. So it could be that there's this thing called Siyata Dishmaya, this thing called Sod Hashem Li Re'ev, that Hashem guides the halachic process in a certain way, or guides your answer, so that I know my answer is right, even if it's not necessarily so easy to explain, And we don't know that a computer's answer has that same support. And the Ramban in Sefer Dvarim says that the reason there's a Sanhedrin on Har HaBayit, right, near the Beit HaMikdash, is because that's where the Shekhinah is. So the Shekhinah is there, and the Shekhinah is going to influence the decisions that the Sanhedrin makes. And so there's reason to say, from sources like that, that there's a little bit of hashgacha involved, that Hashem guides the psach process for people. And the Chazon Ish says the same thing in these letters in source number 10. Hashgachato yitbarach. Hashem's providence. Hu b'chol dor v'dor im ha'yachidim sheshtalan b'chol dor lehorot chukav u'mishpatav li'Yisrael. Hashem has divine providence guiding the halachic process through the greatest halachic authorities of each generation. Hashem guides halacha to be the way it should be for this generation and that generation. So, you know, he doesn't mention this example in this letter, but you could talk about electricity on Shabbos. So, there are a bunch of claims about why electricity is usher on Shabbos, but everyone knows that it's usher on Shabbos. And now, as generations have gone on, some of those arguments don't necessarily seem as solid. We had a bunch of different malachas that electricity could have been. Seems like not so clear how many of them are really solid arguments. But it was really great that Hashem's hashgacha decided that electricity would be usher on Shabbos, because that preserved Shabbos in a way that would have been very hard to preserve otherwise. So you can make that argument. You could point to other examples where we got very lucky that we paskim a certain way. It really worked out well for us that we paskim a certain way. And so the Chazon Ish would tell you, and some of these other sources would tell you, that there's a divine, you know, support that points the halachic process in the right direction that people have that computers don't have. Hashem only gets involved for human beings. That's a possibility as well, that we have to rely on people, but only people of certain, you know, intellectual standing and certain moral standing, you know, the religiously, you know, the right kind of people, they get that extra divine support. Rav Schechter heard about this. Rav Schechter was interviewed about this question from YU, and Rav Schechter said, I don't know, maybe you only need Siyata Dishmaya if you're a fallible human being, but if you're an infallible computer, and you're never going to forget anything, and you're never going to make a mistake in comparing cases, so maybe you don't need divine help. You're just going to get it right every time. Or maybe the people who build the computer have Siyata Dishmaya, right? The same way I write a book, I mean, I haven't written a book, but if I wrote a book, I'd have hopefully Siyata Dishmaya. I write Betta Machdal on the top of every page. So maybe when I program the computer to learn, I'm also going to have Siyata Dishmaya, that it will learn correctly and be able to give the right psak. Or maybe computers can have Siyata Dishmaya. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe, you know, there's a black box, right? We talk about AI as this sort of black box. You put stuff in and stuff comes out, and we don't really understand what's happening in its brain. So maybe Hashem could make things happen in its brain that will give us the right answer. We don't know. It's hard to make halachic predictions based on divine providence. You know, you're not necessarily supposed to poskim based on your assumption about how Hashem interacts with the world. I think it's reasonable. That's the second argument that people make in this context, opposing an AI. A third argument is that only, you know, we mentioned psak requires a certain personal standing, so that's true for being a dayan. A dayan needs to have a certain personal standing. Maybe any posik needs to have some kind of personal standing. You know, the smak in the Sefer Mitzvah Katan, source number 11, Mitzvah Kuf Yud Aleph 111, there's a lot of ones in that line, says that there's a mitzvah, mina Torah, one of the biblical commandments is to issue halachic rulings. When you know the halacha, you're supposed to issue a psak. When you don't know the halacha, you're not supposed to issue a psak. But when you do, you have a chiyuv to issue a psak. And if you feel, oh, I'm such an anal, I'm not really anybody, I shouldn't be, you know, making a ruling right now, you're wrong. You should. There's a mitzvah to paskin halacha. So it could be that that mitzvah requires a Jew in good standing. It's not possible for, you know, we didn't ask this question. Can a non-Jew paskin? You know, he's a conversion candidate. He's learning a lot of halacha, but his conversion is delayed for some reason. But in the meantime, he's going to get smicha. So he's a big talmid chacham. So maybe if the goal of psak is get the right answer, so he's a genius. He knows how to get the right answer, just like a computer. But maybe you require a certain participation in the Jewish people, relationship to Torah, something like that, that makes it only possible for a Jewish person to give a psak, or a person. Forget a Jewish person or not, a person to give up sack, but not something inanimate. So you make that argument as well. And that is why I think it's harder to refute. The best refutation would just be to say, maybe we don't poskin like the smock. Maybe we don't really poskin that there's something human about the psak process, and really it's just about getting the right information, however you get it. But that, I think, is going to be hard to substantiate. That, I think, is the biggest weakness and the biggest area where we can argue against an AI, and I haven't been able to weasel my way out of this one just yet. I may be able to soon. I don't know. We have a long time before this becomes relevant. But in the meantime, we can circle back to the point I made a few minutes ago, that we don't necessarily have to think of Psak as finding the single right answer, and the computer is about getting the right answer. It could be about a certain process of picking an answer, not the right answer, who says there even is the right answer, but about a process of developing what the halacha should be for us in this time, in this place. The best manifestation of this basic idea, that there might not necessarily be right halachic answers, but a right halachic process, is a very well-known Gemara in the Masechet Bava Metzia. It's the story of Tanur Shel Achnai. The specific details of the halachic debate aren't so relevant. But what happens in the story, and you can take a look at it, it's definitely worth reading in full at some point, is a long, extended debate between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer about a certain halachic topic. And Rabbi Eliezer is the lone wolf. Everyone agrees with Rabbi Yehoshua. But he keeps bringing these miraculous signs to prove that the halacha is like him. If the halacha is like me, the river should flow backwards. And a miracle happens and the river starts flowing backwards. If the halacha is like me, this tree is going to fly out of the ground and move over somewhere else. And the tree does. And so on and so forth. Until eventually he says, if the halacha is like me, may a voice from heaven come and say the halacha is like me. And then the voice does. There's literally a heavenly voice that says, halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. He got it right. And Rabbi Yeshua responds, we don't poskin like heavenly voices. We don't poskin like the words coming from heaven. Rather, we poskin acharei rabim lahatot, from the end of this section. We poskin like the majority. We poskin like a majority vote of the Sanhedrin, of the authorized halachic authorities of the time. And the Gemara concludes that, what was Hashem doing while this was happening? Hashem was laughing, and he was saying, oh, my children have beat me. Yeah, I tried to make the halakha like Rabbi Eliezer, but they won. I couldn't do anything about it. It's a very funny story, very interesting. But what comes out of the story, most obviously, not everyone agrees to this, but I think it's a very simple reading of the story, is to say, halakha is not about getting anything that looks like the objectively right answer. When a voice from heaven tells you what the objectively right answer is, I can't imagine better evidence that that's the right answer. But the point of the story is to say, we don't care. I don't care about the objectively right answer or not. I care that this human process of studying and applying Torah and issuing rulings happened the way it was supposed to. And so the majority voted, and we agreed this was the halacha, and too bad that we're wrong. Doesn't matter. Because halacha is about following a certain kind of process. It's a human system where you follow certain rules and you get the answers that you get. We don't care about anything that's objective, and so we wouldn't care if a computer was going to be better at this than we were. That's irrelevant to us, because we have a process for how this is meant to work. If we follow that line of thinking, so it makes a lot of sense to limit it to people, and it makes a lot of sense to not care about precision and accuracy so much as what is communally acceptable. Right, Ramosha Feinstein, I think, I give this to you. He was interviewed in the New York Times in the 70s. And he said, how do you become a posek? You can't wake up in the morning and decide you're an expert on answers. If people see that one answer is good and another answer is good, gradually you'll be accepted. In other words, as people come to accept you, you'll be an authority. But it's not about being right or the biggest scholar or the biggest expert. It's about following the process correctly, and whatever conclusion the process gives you. So I think there are a few ways of developing this, and we'll wrap up with these, right? So if the goal is not the accuracy, but the process, we have to figure out why that should be. Why it's going to be important to follow a halachic process, and asking questions to people, and having human beings deciding and debating halacha, as opposed to something that looks like a more objective, authoritative system. Number one, I mentioned this idea of communal acceptance. There's an idea that a posek is a communal leader, which needs to be a person accepted by the community. The second value here, which is Rav Sherlo articulates in source number 15, Rav Yuval Sherlo is one of these people who also hits these hot topics as soon as they come out. So this was an article in Makor Rishon in February of 2023. It was really like when this was the most cutting edge it was. And he draws a parallel to the story of Moshe And Yitro, Parsha Yitro. Yitro comes and he sees Moshe and he says, Moshe, you're tiring yourself out. You can't keep it up this way. And Moshe responds, I can't stop either because the people who are coming to me are coming Lidrosh Elokim. They're here interested not in getting an answer to a practical problem, but in encountering the word of Hashem. And that's something that is hard to get from a computer. You need to be in an encounter with a person who has received the Masorah and is a representative of Torah Shebaal Peh, or is a representative of what Hashem wants in the world. And you talk to that person and you develop that relationship. And that's something that's very hard for a computer to replicate. And the final factor, I think, is that it's just a lot more engaging, it's a lot more fun. I think it'd be very boring if there was an AI that answered all the halakhic questions and we just deferred to it. It's much more fun to learn about these things and debate them and discuss them and have a lively, discussions and arguments and controversies involved. It makes it possible to be osik b'divrei Torah. We say in the bracha de Torah every day that we're interested in being involved in Torah, not just in, getting right answers, right? That's why we don't only learn from books like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which just gives you the bottom letter law. But you want to learn about the process and learn about everything that's involved in it. And that, I think, is very hard for AI to replicate. I think you need to be involved in a community of people who are serving Hashem, studying the Torah, have a process for how to do these things, and AI is not part of that process. Now, where that leads us practically is pretty close to where we started, but I'm not sure it's exactly the same place as where we started. Right? So 20 years from now, someone's going to publish an AI and say, this AI can answer your halakhic questions. And we test it, and it's very good. It gives you good, correct answers. Or at least good enough to rely on, or a legitimate opinion among many answers. So should you use that computer? So it seems like, for basic questions, we suggested, sure, they can answer basic questions, like Google. Questions that require more discretion, we mentioned, you might be a little bit more hesitant for, because I might not have the standing and the authority to do so. And it might not be the kind of being you want to ask your difficult questions, so you might want to ask that to a human being who gives you that encounter with the divine, who gives you that participation in the process, participation in the Masorah. There might be things you're missing. But if I'm a posek, I'm certainly using these computers because they're collecting data for me I never would have found on my own. All of these obscure, interesting sources that are just, I don't have time to read everything, but it's able to collect everything for me that's relevant. And honestly, if the computer has a svara, I'm curious to hear what it thinks. If it is an application to a new case, or if it has a new way of reading sources, that's really interesting to me. But as an idea, not as an authority. So the computer puts out an idea. Let's study it. Let's be interested in what it has to say. But the process of learning Torah, the process of asking questions and answering questions, is one that fundamentally rests with us. Okay? Yisharkol Hashem, thanks so much.